wonderful, wonderful stuff. So we've moved from Hawaii, where it's coming up to 6:57 a.m. in the morning, over to Birmingham, and what better way than to use the magic of the Beatles to actually take us through that. George Harrison, of course, with "Mow My Guitar Gently Weeps," and the wonderful actor extraordinaire who's already done one show today. He's doing another show this evening. He's been kind enough and gracious enough to actually talk to us in betwixt programmes from Birmingham. It is the legendary Paul Mannion. Paul, welcome to the production. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thanks, mate. Yeah, good.
He sounds like a Liverpudlian as well, because he was born in Liverpool. Hooray!
I am a Liverpudlian.
Great stuff. Paul, you have been part of this Let It Be cast for 3 English years now.
Yep.
Yeah, or even Scouse years. You've played both West End runs. The show itself has continued to grow. You've gone round Europe. You've been Amsterdam, Germany, Vienna. And, of course, you played George in Let It Be in Liverpool during the autumn of 2015.
Yes.
So, generally, just a win-win situation. And the resonance that we got, I mean, sadly, we just have Paul and Ringo still around from the original Fab Four. But in terms of the actual resonance, their music will last forever, surely.
Well, you would think so, mate. It's lasted this long and it's still going strong. We get people from all generations coming to see the show. We get young people in their 20s. You get kids with their families. You get old people in their 70s. It's great. It's a great generational thing. It just spans the generations, doesn't it? Hopefully, it's going to carry on for years to come. I think it will do.
George was always the person who, I mean, some people said he actually was the secret force behind the Beatles. But, I mean, from your own perspective, I mean, clearly you've got Lennon and McCartney up front, they've got Ringo. Where do you pitch him from your own sort of line of things? Or is it just a case of, well, look, at the end of the day, he's just an all-round fantastic individual?
Yeah, you're asking me about George,
yes.
Sorry?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I just look at the Beatles as four people in the same band. I mean, I don't think the Beatles would have been the Beatles without any of them. Do you know what I mean? They all make up. They all have their own 25% stuck into the Beatles. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, the Beatles would never be the Beatles without Ringo or George or John or Paul. They just had this magic when they were together. Mm-hmm. Something happened, didn't it? So I don't know what it was, but it was definitely magic going on.
I suspect I'm the only person actually in both the studio and
from
actually
the Sky News.
Thank you. Online, in essence, that actually was kind of around just as a wee child when they were first there. But I mean, Mary, your thoughts on the Beatles?
I love them. I think they're a national treasure. I think they're so, so good. Always on a playlist of mine, to be honest. Mm. But I do want to ask actually, Paul, like, do you have a favourite Beatle tune?
Oh,
changes
from day to day, but the ones I usually choose are either "Here Comes the Sun," which is George Harrison's song, or "Strawberry Fields Forever." I love those songs.
Right. Well, if you'd be kind enough to stay with us then, given that we have a little bit of a heads up, and also we've had a weather condition here, because we found in Hawaii it's very sunny, in Jersey it's been very sunny as well. We've had correspondence there. And what's the weather like in Birmingham, by the way?
Birmingham, it's pretty cold, to be honest.
Well, we're going to send the vibes here with indeed.
That'd be great.
Paul Mannion's favourite song, "Stay With Us." We'll be back after this to find out more about the tour, where you're going to, all the rest of the bits and pieces. 3 minutes of magic.
Okay.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Sun and the rain, you get a rainbow. Yay! Brilliant. Let It Be, of course.
Lovely.
The show continuing in its own marvellous, wondrous way. And just looking at some of the numbers here, the show has been seen by over 2 million people. 2 million people.
I know, it's crazy to think.
Jam-packed with over 40 of the Beatles' greatest hits, as we say. I mean, you're doing... It's like Shea Stadium all over again in Birmingham from that point of view. And we also give a little shout-out, to use the popular radio phrase, to the one and only Erica, who, of course, helped set up this whole piece. You know, she had a few that panics, all being well, but, you know, he said, Erica, it's all right, it'll be working well. Erica on behalf of Bill Elms, so it's a great
Hello,
start.
Erica.
Hey! There you go. Fiona, as an American, your views on the Beatles?
Oh, well, my dad's English, so...
Yeah, so we brought up with the Beatles, effectively.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Very much so.
And what favourite Beatles tune for yourself?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Emily, questions for Paul.
Well, I mean, the show sounds so good, I feel like I'm going to have to go, because
we should be there. We should be over in Birmingham this very evening, but, you know...
From what I heard, you've travelled quite a lot with the show, is that right?
Yeah, we've been all over the shop. We're going to Korea in 2 weeks' time.
Oh, wow.
Is that North Korea? Because that would be fun.
South Korea, definitely South. We were in Japan for a couple of weeks. We've done everywhere, all over Europe, Russia.
And the question that clearly we were sort of putting to you there when we were speaking to our Hawaiian correspondent, would you be getting over to Hawaii? Because I'm not sure the Beatles ever performed in Hawaii. I think we should get
you
over.
I'd love to. I'm going to phone the office today and try and get them to book it.
Currently, of course, you're at the Hippodrome in Birmingham. You're on to Aylesbury, the Waterside Theatre. Darlington Civic Theatre, of course, on the 5th or 14th of May. And the 9th. You're quite right. 9th and 14th of May we got this. Eastbourne Congress after that, Marlowe, you're at the Bristol Hippodrome after that, followed by the Oxford New Theatre, Dartford Orchard Theatre, Leeds Grand Theatre, the Theatre Royal in Brighton, and the Theatre Royal in Plymouth. And if you haven't had a chance to actually listen to that or catch it all down, you can go to the website, which is Let It Be Live, not Let It Be Live, could be easily confused, letitbelive.com. One of the other aspects about shows like this, well, I mean, we've covered, obviously, in the past, shows like Buddy and Queen Musical and areas within that whole field, is people know the tunes, they know the whole system. So when you first sort of signed up for the role, did you sort of think, well, this is wonderful, or did you do much method? What's the sort of approach that you took in terms of...
Well, I was quite lucky. I knew quite a lot of the songs anyway, personally, because I just, as a guitarist and as a musician, I played piano a bit as well, and as a singer... Something I've always grown up with, you know, especially being from Liverpool, the Beatles were always around. So, and when I was in music college, the Beatles were always used as a reference musically and stuff. But so, I kind of knew the songs anyway. But with our musical director John Marr, and we had like a couple of weeks of intensive rehearsals of like literally picking the songs apart and getting them as close as possible. It was kind of listening with fresh ears, really, and. Yeah, we put a lot of work into it, and we still do. We still have rehearsals and still listen back and go over again in case, you know, little things get lost, or, you know what I mean, when you're on the road, things get lost. So, yeah, we're constantly going back and listening to the source material and keeping it as close to the original as possible, really, keeping it authentic.
As you said, you studied music theory at Liverpool Community College.
That's right.
Covered a whole range of other sort of factors. And you also compose music as well, which is...
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So it's just... Paul, you are a multifaceted Renaissance man, clearly.
I love that, yeah, Renaissance man.
Exactly. In fact, I fully expect to see that appearing on the routine. Quick name check for your colleagues who play, of course, Paul and John and Ringo. Would you like to just name check them as well?
Yeah, we've got Stu Wilkinson plays Ringo. Manny Angeletti plays Paul. We've got two Pauls. So Manny Angeletti... Oh, my God.
It's all right. It's okay. It's all there. Even the Beatles could forget who was actually in the band every so often. They'd say, what's
Paul Canning, Reuben Gershon, John Lennon.
It's wonderful. I mean, there's a whole range of folk there in terms of company and creative, and you can find details on from there. Two final questions for your good self. Paul Mannion, have you had an okay link with us on this? Your debut on the Midweek Drive, has it been okay for you, sir?
It's been great, mate, yeah. It's been fun.
So, a round of applause for Paul Mannion, please.
And thank you.
Can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not too distant future and keeping us appraised of how Let It Be, the musical, continues on its way?
Yes, of course, mate. No worries.
very good. It's always impressive when they actually are. When are you on stage, by the way, in Birmingham? Is it another half an hour?
I've got about an hour or so, I'm just going to go and
breathe.
Go and have a breather. And this, maybe have a lie down for half an hour.
And remember, nothing is real.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Living is easy.
Goes round the mountain and then stays very quiet and then comes back again, and that's a way forward. We move from one composition, of course, by the Beatles, a reminder, of course, Paul Mannion, as George Harrison in the Beatles musical Let It Be, currently in Birmingham, but all around the country. Anyway, we move dexterously from that to another ace composer, genius composer, film composer. In many ways, we should also thank Ilana Rain as being a producer of this programme, responsible, obviously, for a Hawaiian correspondent, P.F. Buck, whom we heard from earlier in Hawaii. And certainly the legend who indeed composed the music for one of Ilana's top tunes. It's Luke Corradine. Welcome to the programme, Luke. How are you?
Hi, Alex. You were so kind. Thank you so much for that introduction.
Well, it's always a delight to connect with your good self. And, of course, the really exciting news is we'll be meeting you in person, all being well, on a week on Friday, actually. So, yes, a little London location report.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Very good. We'll take the road to St Pancras on the way. Sorry, we'll see what we did there. In a few seconds, we'll hear the road to St Pancras. But, Luke, we're here to do a double whammy because we're going shortly to Tomasz Szafanski, who's our director and co-writer of No Panic with a hint of Hysteria, who's going to be alive from Poland. And you're taking production credit as well for this, Luke, because it's proving, we talked about Renaissance persons, etc., but musically scoring the whole thing. Stay with us, Luke, for a few seconds, because I think we deserve to find a little bit about the road to St Pancras. What do you say, Mary? I mean, you're a Londoner, so the road to St Pancras? Well, this is the road to St Pancras. Okay. Atmospheric, and nothing to do with No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria, but with an earlier movie, Luke, which of course was entitled
The Smoke,
exactly, which we talked about, etc. And it just it sort of added. And if you want a treat, get yourself a copy of The Smoke. It's an outstanding little movie, and it's well worth sort of accessing, if only for Luke Carradine's fantastic music. Mary, questions for Luke, please.
So apart from No Panic with a hint of hysteria.
A hint of hysteria.
What other works have you been working on recently?
As if that wasn't enough. I mean, the whole movie.
Thank you, Mary. I've happened to just finish a film with Richard Blackwood and Stephen Marcus called Welcome to Curiosity, which should premiere hopefully very soon. And that's a gorgeous little British gangster film shot in Cornwall, which I enjoyed very much. I mean, you know, Richard Blackwood is a tremendous talent, so, you know, he really carried the film incredibly well. But, you know, I'm always busy with other things, not necessarily film, but advertising and absolute proper music, let's say, without the image attached to it. Co-writing with various composers around the world, so always busy, I guess.
And it's the way forward. Creative folks, when they're at the top of the game, usually are. Let's have a look at No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria. A timid accountant tries to earn his living as a hitman. How often we hear that routine, you know? If you're not making as much funding as an accountant, why do you try and earn your living as a hitman? Until he becomes a target for the vengeful mafia boss, murderous gangsters, mad cops, and a sexy blonde. If he's not careful, his own wife might catch wind of his double life too. You've got a lovely cast. You've got Stephen Baldwin, of course, one of the fabulous Baldwin brothers there. Charlotte Kirk, a lovely British actress currently over in the States as well. Alexander Chance. What was it that kind of appealed to your good self when this first came on? I mean, obviously we'll talk about Tomasz's involvement as director, but you're co-producer of No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria. It's one of those titles which, once it kind of sits with you, you think, yes, absolutely, who needs Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice when you got No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria? Sorry about that.
Well, the truth of the matter is I was very lucky to be involved very, very early on. So Thomas and I met in Cannes at the festival 2 years ago, and we really clicked the very minute we met, or we were introduced. By the distributors of The Smoke, that's an interesting coincidence. Mm-hmm. We clicked, and then I went back to London, he went back to Warsaw, and we talked 2 months later. He passed a copy of the script over my way, which I read and loved it. And then he obviously went on doing different things. He did another film in the meantime called The Adventurers Club, which became very successful in his country. And one day he called me and said, listen, I've got the film really finished. I think we should talk about this. And he showed me a demo, or a little clip that he had, and I thought, oh, this is absolutely amazing. It really is an amazing film. I think it's certainly the best film I've laid my musical hands on this far, and I really have a lot of hope for it. And the rest is history.
High praise indeed. Let's have a little segment, and you can actually talk us through what we're about to, well, what we will be listening to as we hear some of your wonderful composition to No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria. Sensing lots of movement, lots of kinetic approaches, lots of Alec Baldwin doing his stuff and more. Am I in the right ballpark there, Luke? What sort of aspect does that come across at? Is that opening sequence?
This takes place during a really, really exciting fight at a cemetery between the timid accountant and one of the mafia guys. And they rolling down the hills and doing whatnot, and there's all sorts of danger, and it's at night, and the pretty blonde is chasing them and trying to catch up with them, and blah, 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 while Stephen Baldwin is doing his thing to save the day somewhere else at the cemetery as well. So it is extremely hectic at that point, and there's a lot of sound design that the music is synced up with, And in all honesty, and Thomas will be laughing, I'm sure he will be smiling at least when he hears this, but it took us a while to get the balance right because there was so much. Mm-hmm. And I think in the end, everyone did a great job in the sound department, and it's quite great, actually.
I mean, folk don't realise just how important a good musical score can actually be. I mean, I know Phil Leonis will be joining us at the final closing sections of the programme, as ever, often talks about the range of music that comes through. But, I mean, Emily, when you see a motion picture, does the soundtrack, the musical soundtrack, impact on yourself?
I definitely think so, and I think some films you watch and you hear the soundtrack and you think it's totally wrong for the film. I think that has happened. I mean, what I'd be interested to know, so does the film get completely made and then you get your hands on it to do the music, or is it kind of a ongoing process as the film is being made?
It used to be pretty much the former and not the latter. So it used to be that there was enough activity in the industry that you would just wait for the producers and the directors to call you, and they would send you the final locked film, and off you went. After a sort of given 2 months, you'd be done with your work, and that was it. But the way the industry is these days, composers tend to also to secure the work and to establish more of a relationship with the directors. They tend to get involved very, very early on. As early as script stage, and sometimes you're even requested to compose for like a section of the script, like maybe a paragraph or sometimes a scene or whatever. So it has become very integral in that sense.
And what pray tell, Luke, is happening at this particular part of the film?
Sorry?
What pray tell is happening at this particular part of the film when this is coming through?
You know, I can hear you because of the music. Sorry.
What's happening when that musical cues? Because I'm thinking that's very much in a kind in. Mary, how would you define that particular brand?
Like quite curious, quite sneaky, like
sort of
Hercule
Poirot.
You're on the money there, Mary. You're definitely on the money. This is right at the beginning of the film, and the timid accountant is carrying away a corpse, which in fact we find out later on it's not a corpse, it's Stephen Baldwin who's pretending to be dead.
He's acting, it's all right, he's acting, he's not really just...
Exactly, he's acting, he's acting it. And he's hidden inside a Christmas tree, and the accountant, the protagonist, and his second-in-command, they're carrying it. They sort of carrying it to a car, their car, across town. So it's very cheeky, it's very comedic at that point.
I cannot wait until we'll catch this movie. I mean, it's obviously, it was released in Poland on the 29th of February, leap year from that point of view. Will it be given a theatrical release in Britain? Are we looking for that? Hopefully, Luke?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't actually, Alex. It will be premiered at Cannes in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, so we'll have to do a live link with you from Cannes, because I know we've done that before. Keep our connections there. But it'll be, let's say it's an outside bet for the Palme d'Or. Fingers crossed, Palme d'Or.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I think so. It should be very good. Luke, it's been fabulous touching base with yourself, but we're heading off to the director and co-writer of No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria. That's Tomasz Szafanski, who's going to be connecting with us from Poland. All being well, I think I'll ask Fiona to put those last two questions to our ace correspondent and indeed musical genius, Luke Corradine.
Great. So have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Oh, very much so. Thank you.
Great. And would you like to join us again in the future?
Oh, well, anytime.
Absolutely. And in fact, we've already got this earmarked for hopefully, I don't know, Mary, if you're able to join us for a little London location report week on Friday.
Yes, but that's on the diary.
Meet Luke in person. Fantastic. Cue the movie. and relax. Again, another perfect example of Luke Carradine's work there in No Panic with a hint of hysteria. Directed, of course, by a soon-to-be legend, and he's already wonderful in every sense of the word because he's connecting to us with us live from Poland, ace director Tomasz Szafanski. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Thanks for the lovely introduction and a very lovely piece of music. Congratulations, Luke. Well, I really love what you did.
Well, this is, of course, the critical point, because there are moments, and I think this clearly hasn't happened with yourself and Luke, where directors can actually get a film score and they say, that's not what I'm looking for at all. Mm-hmm. But presumably that hasn't occurred here. What actually Luke's provided has really matched the movie tone superbly. I mean, as a director, you must be very pleased.
Very much so, very much so. When I first met Luke, we talked for hours about the movies that we love and the soundtrack that we love, enumerating numerous composers who we really admired. So we were pretty much on the same page, even before we actually started working. And when we did, the only thing I did as a director with respect to Luke was actually to encourage him to take as many risks as possible, to actually not be afraid to step beyond and actually go, so to speak, delve with full fantasy into this project.
The film itself, I mean, we've heard the title, we've given a little hint away of No Panic with a hint of hysteria, but it does seem as though, again, with a cast that includes Stephen Baldwin, Charlotte Kirk, Alexander Chance,
right.
What drew you to the project in the first place? Was it something you thought, actually, I want to work with this? I mean, it's on the one hand farcical, it's humorous, it's a tragicomedy. Where would
right.
you...
Years ago, when I was a teenager, I saw that wonderful movie by Frank Capra called Arsenic and Old Lace.
Superb.
And I absolutely fell in love with the kind of humor it presented. It was black humor, but with some romantic elements, and it was full of surprises, and it took place in just a couple of locations, and it had a dead body. Everything around it. Revolved around that dead body, and I thought that one day I have to make a movie like that. I was a teenager at that time, but even then I wanted to be a movie director, and I wrote a lot, and like 10 years later I had this script ready called No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria, which at first I wanted to make in Poland with Polish actors, but then I thought that maybe it would be funnier if I actually shot it in English in America with some of the Polish actors playing Polish gangsters. And that's how No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria was born. It's like a black romantic comedy full of twists and really crazy in every way. But I think a funny movie talking about quite a serious thing being a marriage on the rocks. Which picks itself up after all the hysteria going on within the story.
I just love that notion, and obviously my father was Polish, so hence the name Lewczuk, but I love that line of getting the Polish actors to be the gangsters. You know, let's not be stereotypical here. Let's just do some... Looking at Arsenic and Old Lace, of course, that had Cary Grant in it, so the 1944 original Frank Capra thing, so his suddenly vanished. Cut off in midstream there. Outrageous. Worry not. We will endeavour to actually get him back. You know, clearly, you know, we mentioned one thing there. Suddenly mentioned Polish gangsters. What can happen here? Outrageous on that side of things. But anyway, the point being, you know, mm-hmm. we'll just have to sort of work our way through that. We've had a couple of lines from Penny Evans, who said that she's about to head off on holiday, so she'd be connecting a whole variety of things. And I think Nowhere Man was her favourite Beatles song. So
okay.
Nice to see that's come through from that perspective. We're hopefully sort of redialing again now. Mm-hmm. So all being well, we should be able to actually welcome Tomasz back to the whole thing. No, see, the trouble is he probably hasn't hung up. Hopefully he has realised that the connection has actually sort of dropped. And as a result of that, we've had a slight sort of technical hitch on that basis, otherwise it's disastrous. Yeah. Does this movie appeal to yourself, Emily?
Yeah, it definitely does. Arsenic and Old Lace is one of those films that my dad keeps telling me to watch and I keep not getting around to, so I'll have to watch both.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited about this one as well. Yeah. It looks really good. it will air soon, or it will be premiered soon, won't it?
Yeah, so we can get hold of it.
After the Cannes Film Festival, and doubtless we look forward to Richard Fitzwilliams doing a full package on the whole sort of sequence.
There we go.
Splendid. Time for Razor Light.
What a drag it is, the shape I'm in. Well, I go out somewhere, then I come home again. A lot of cigarette, cause I can't get no sleep. There's nothing on the TV, nothing on the radio that means that much to me. All my life, been watching America. All my life,
don't worry, we'll give you the full version before too long of America and Razor Light. But Tom Ash is back with us. Yay!
Hello again.
I didn't know.
Nice to be back.
You mentioned Polish gangsters. Instantly, the CIA got to wind of it. They cut the line. It's outrageous.
Don't do it again, Alex.
Shh. Please, honestly. He's still there. Emily, you were saying you're really looking forward to this movie because, again, you were once told you should go and see Arsenic of the Lace by your father, no less.
Yeah, he tends to tell me to watch films quite often and it'll get put to the bottom of my list. So I'll put it to the top of my list and I'll have to watch both.
Inevitably. We approach the Cannes Film Festival. I've already said it should go in for the Palme d'Or. It should surely sort of win for that side of things. It's going to be our choice already of movies to support at the 2016 Cannes Film Festival. Are you quite excited by that, Tomash? Is that something where you think, actually, yes, it still gives us a thrill, or is it a case of, no, I'm already working on my next project?
Well, actually, both. I'm very excited about No Panic being premiered at Cannes. And at the same time, I'm also, me and Luke, actually, head over heels in our next project, which is called Seconds.
Mm-hmm. And do we get a slight hint as to what Seconds is about? Is it a timepiece, perhaps?
No, not particularly. It's a thriller with some dark humor elements, of course, because that's the kind of thing that I feel very comfortable in. And it's about a quiz game show. And it's a very unpleasant host who one day, during the final episode of the show, is actually contacted by a terrorist who hijacks his show and puts him into the place of one of his contestants. And now he has to answer a series of progressively tougher questions and beat the terrorist at his own game because the time runs out and he has got only a couple of seconds, really, to answer each question. He's not very bright, but he's got he's got these entertaining skills, and so he tries to, you know, wiggle his way out and become a hero in the process. So it's quite a tense and funny story, really.
Sounds like a must-see movie to me. I mean,
sounds hilarious.
Writer and director. We mentioned, obviously, Frank Capra there. Would you consider remaking It's a Wonderful Life?
Oh, I think some movies cannot be remade. Actually, I think none of the movies should be remade, really. It very rarely does it happen that a remake is better than the original. I think that Steven Spielberg's always being the remake of one of the classics,
yes,
with Spencer Tracy.
Exactly.
Yeah, that might be one example of a remake better than the original. Mm. But actually, I think that we should stick to the classics and enjoy them and admire them and not try to put them into this modern box. And so I prefer to remain the fan of It's a Wonderful Life than the director of the new version, actually.
Perfect answer. Whereabouts in Poland are you based at present?
Actually, I'm in Warsaw. It's quite cold, but my wife is in London now, and she says that it's even colder there than here.
Well, that's why we Europeans have to stick together. It's all very
exactly.
well, these correspondents in Nashville and Los Angeles and Hawaii and even Jersey saying the weather's better. No! We like the snow. We like the coldness. It gives us our meaning.
Yeah.
Excellent.
We learn to enjoy it, right?
Tomasz, it's been absolutely superb. I feel generally sort of thrilled to feature you today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link yourself on your debut today? Has it been okay for you?
Excuse me?
Have you enjoyed the last contribution to the programme? Has it been all right for yourself?
Of course, very much so, very much so, thank you.
So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future and possibly linking up with Cannes and more other bits and pieces as well? Will you
certainly
return?
Certainly, I will be looking forward to
it. A round of applause for Tomasz Szewanski, director, writer, and all-round good egg.
Thanks a lot. Have a nice evening there.
Ryan's arms are wide enough to hold us both together, although we're worlds apart. I'd cross the stars for you.
In the heart of a sleepless moon, I'll be with you forever. This is my destiny. Till my life is through. Searching for a lover in the sea of tranquility, drowning without you, my dear. When I'm lost, feeling lonely, I just look to heaven. I find my comfort there. God only knows where you are.
Say Prince RIP, as we mentioned at the start of the show, also a special RIP and all the very best to a gentleman who also was a midweek driver for a short time earlier this year. Back in February, of course, we were blessed with the views of Trevor T, musical youth, past the Duchy from the left-hand side, sadly passed away a few days ago. Trevor, we know you're up there, so just spread the word, really. Heaven FM has got another top presenter, but we've still got an ace correspondent lined up now who's still echoing the joys of magnificence and so on. I'm sure we'll be putting in celebrity deaths, also allowing for the fact that Guy Hamilton, director of the wonderful Bond movies Live and Let Die, Man with the Golden Gun, and Goldfinger, also passed on. But Phil Leonis is still with us. Hurrah! How are you, Phil?
I did not know about Guy Hamilton dying. That is, that's very sad. That's because, indeed, an iconic director responsible for several films. I mean, it doesn't have the same, you know, level of sadness, obviously, that some of these we've been inundated with, who still seem to be just in the prime of their careers. And Guy Hamilton, I think, had been retired for quite some time now, but always a wonderful opportunity to get to celebrate their films. And he made many contributions outside of James Bond, so I urge people to look at this gentleman's director. May I explain something to you, Alex, about the film business?
Of course, Phil. You are the expert in this field.
Thank you, sir. I thought I was going to have to explain to you the difference between Alec Baldwin and Stephen Baldwin, but Luke did that for me in a much more sensitive, gentle way than I would have done with you. So the Cannes Film Festival, how do I put this? Okay, so there's more, but there's really three major film markets every year, Berlinale, Cannes, and the AFM in Santa Monica, where buyers from around the world come to purchase licensed movies to show in their territories, their countries, their group of countries, whatever they might be. So you have film distribution companies and buyers negotiating over hundreds, and indeed when you take into account library titles, thousands, tens of thousands of titles each year in all media. So all the business of what gets shown around the world, not only in theaters, but especially in video, television, etc., streaming, gets done at these markets. And all of them have contemporaneously film festivals going on at the same location, though those film festivals are not linked directly with these film markets. But the festivals, either in some cases, the festivals take advantage of the market itself by saying, hey, the world, the global film audience is here, let's take advantage of that fact and let's have our festival at that time. Or the counter, hey, there's this famous festival, the world press is here, let's have our global film meeting at the same time. Okay, I hope that makes sense to you. And the reason I bring this up is so that in the future you neither ask whether or not their film won the Palme d'Or, nor get disappointed when it didn't, because it's not participating in the Cannes Film Festival.
Exactly. Okay?
It's screening in Cannes at the film market. Mm. For, you know, for all the important film personages around the world. It's a very important screening that they're having, but you won't be reading about it in the press. So please don't get disappointed and don't make them feel bad that they didn't win a Palme d'Or that they weren't competing for in the first place.
Phil, if I may say, the very fact that they're on the midweek drive means that they are an automatic international winner. So, and we hope you appreciate
they're in the
Lady Killers.
There's a whole different competition category. I didn't realize that. No, it's so interesting because I and if you can tell that I've been in a similar circumstance, you're right. You know, when we were testing Karl Rove, I Love You, we had a test screening at Cannes to find out whether we were done, and we didn't tell anyone about the film. We didn't do anything. It was a private screening. People had to get special coins. American counterfeit coins with Karl Rove's face on them to be able to get into this screening, and it was such a success for us. And yet, people who were only peripherally attached to the industry would hear about this and go, "Well, did you win an award?" And then I had to explain, no, it's not the festival. It's kind of a more important deal. But anyway,
it's
so there you
okay.
Go.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's rather like if you're an actor, you get the question in Britain, have you ever done Coronation Street or The Bill or EastEnders? Mm-hmm. And if you haven't, people don't take you seriously. It's the same sort of thing. Only kidding. Because we know that there are lots of wonderful people in all of those shows, one of whom we actually feature tomorrow morning, who actually was in virtually every episode of The Bill, actually.
Wow.
It's astounding. Anyway, when did you join us, Phil? Because it's clearly important.
It's interesting. I'm preparing my ninth anniversary installment of my free weekly podcast, Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Mm. So when did I join you? I joined you 5 years ago, I think. Would it be next week? Five years ago, next week was the first time I joined you.
And to celebrate, we will be going down to the Sci-Fi London Film Festival, and I'll hopefully be putting a little plaque up with Louis Servi, and we'll touch base, and Luke Carradine and myself will raise a glass to the legend that is.
Did you say you'll be putting a plaque up?
I think
you'll be putting a plaque up on the wall. This is where Alex Leftrich and Phil Lairdus
That's my intention, really. I think we should really get one of those blue English Heritage signs. It's that sort of level, really. We should.
Would be lovely.
Exactly.
Can we talk about music in movies? Because we play so many wonderful cues from movies on this show that I love, and it is such an important topic, music in movies.
Penny Evans says, Phil, film and TV composers are the only way you can hear classical star music today. Thank you, Penny.
So anyway, the importance, obviously, can be really twofold. And I think one of the reasons why, as was said, you'll sometimes hear a score to a movie, and even though you know that this is a talented composer and you hear wonderful music, but you think, wow, this is wrong for this movie. And that happens because what gets overlooked so often is that the music, much like the story itself, needs to come out of the character. It needs to reflect the inner life of the characters that you're seeing. And what happens all too often is that producers come in and impose music upon a film. We need the audience to feel this way, regardless of, well, is that what's going on with the characters right now? Is that reflective of their journey? When anything gets imposed upon the movie, it often runs the risk of feeling like it's not right for the movie. And it happens. I single out producers because the one of the areas in which everyone on this planet thinks they are an expert is when it comes to musical taste.
Let's hold that thought because I'm going to test it with the Midrick Drivets, Phil. Fiona, do you feel you're an expert on music in the movies?
No. That's not what I said.
Oh.
I said that everyone thinks they're an expert when it comes to their own musical taste. That's
okay.
What I said.
Okay.
But
same question.
Taste in music doesn't really have anything to do with it. It can be good music is the point. But the question is it appropriately insightful to the character's journey? And that's a different conversation altogether.
Okay, Mary, I'll stand by that question. Are you an expert in your own musical taste?
I'm not sure.
Not sure.
Yeah, I don't even understand what that question means, and I've been talking about it for...
Emily.
I'd go with no, but I do say that I've seen quite a few films. I find it with historical dramas, or like when it's a film, where they've put like modern music or like rock music to it, and I'm just looking at it thinking that's completely wrong, because you've taken like an old style world thing and then you've put modern music to it, and I just don't usually think that works.
Definitely. Fiona?
No, definitely not, because I have such an eclectic taste of music and films. I have no favourite.
And indeed like Batman versus Superman, The Dawn of Justice.
Yes.
There you are. There are one or two of us around, and it'll be a growing number, Phil. You mark my words. Anyway, sorry, Phil. Carry on. It is your segment of the programme.
There's just sadly a few million of you too few for that movie to even break even. So anyway, why is the Captain America Civil War movie going to do twice the box office of... Because it's twice as good. Okay, anyway, the thing about music, though, I mean, you know, this relationship between composer and director and, you know, filmmaker is so important. And I love the question about when does a composer come to the project, because we are finally at the point where, yes, composers are starting to get involved regularly. It used to be the outlier, but they are getting regularly involved earlier, sometimes even in the script phase. I know I enjoy working with my composer, Greg DeBellis, while I'm working on the script. We want to be thinking about this. And one of the things that he always has me do is send him songs or any musical cues that I've been listening to as I prepare to shoot scenes or as I'm writing them, because he knows that I think musically when I edit. And so it's always an insight to him in terms of just what kind of pieces of music are inspiring me. But it's you have to be very courageous as a composer, because it isn't about, as we're saying, necessarily doing beautiful music, doing evocative music. It's about music that really fits what the filmmakers are trying to get across. And I know my composer was feeling very frustrated with The Lady Killers, because every time he started to veer into music that, quite frankly, was too cool, it was really groovy stuff, it was really funky, and whenever he would veer into stuff that was honestly too cool, I'd have to pull him back and going, no, because this music is making our characters start to be too likable and seem too cool, and we don't want that. And so he had to have the courage to say, okay, I'm writing music now that fits better, and yet I know there's going to be people who say, you know, that movie would have been better if the music had been more cool. So it really takes a lot of courage and trust and faith, but that's why the collaboration, when it works, is so rewarding.
It's like synergy. And from Captain America Civil War, a little snippet of the music we're going to hear from that as well. Only a matter of hours before some people around the country will be able to see three Captain America movies back to back. Yes, a midnight screening of Captain America Civil War, preceded by Captain America Winter Soldier, preceded of course by Captain America First Avenger. It's tremendous. Thanks to Penny Evans for certainly saying another top line: music heals the soul, whatever genre it is. It's almost replaced the Mike Dooley slot, but not quite. Because I know, Fiona, you were still working on the notion that, given last week we had the delightful Lily Holliman on filled in as duty. Phil obviously was taking time out there to practice his Alex Levchuk impersonation, which of course we challenged him with 2 weeks ago, you may recall.
Do you recall?
Exactly. And I'm thinking, has he already dropped it in there? Has he somehow kind of worked in an impression subtly in a sort of Leoness-esque way? Or has he decided, no, I just want to talk about Paul Mannion and the Beatles or more Luke Carradine work, or indeed how I had to pass on P.F. Buck in Hawaii because I was doing the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. Phil, the floor is still yours.
Was there a question?
I am not
ready to unveil the Alex Levchuk impersonation, and I'm not sure I should unveil it on your show.
No.
I'm wondering if I should unveil it on someone else's show, like maybe my own.
There we are.
I mean, because that's a ratings grab
in
right
the,
there.
In the words of Dean Haglund, co-host of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, what?
What?
Yeah. Dear me. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Did you catch a Hawaiian link with Buck, of course, from Hawaii and his connections there?
Well, when was that?
That would have been in your time. Well, in Hawaiian time, it was 6:40 a.m. In Los Angeles time, it would have been probably, say, slap bang in the middle of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club at around
9:40.
Exactly.
9:40. No. I'm out until 10 a.m.
Yeah.
My time.
So we'll have caught George Harrison. Yes, the George Harrison as portrayed by Paul Mannion. Wonderful. And more. What else has he missed, Fiona? I mean, what else should he actually tune into the podcast for from this particular edition?
Just fantastic conversations that we've had with the composer as well as the director of No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria.
That's what I heard.
William Coles, advice on running. I mean, Phil has
Bill Coles. I missed Bill Coles.
He was really good.
How can I hear these things? How can I get to hear this?
Well, strange you should actually ask that, because we actually have a voiceover artist who's the father of Hollywood actress Rachel Hurdwood, who actually was put to that sort of scenario exactly. We said, Phil, how can people actually find out about this whole sort of sequence?
Missed some of the many amazing interviews and features on the Midweek Drive? Relax and check out the podcast highlights on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Does that set your mind at ease then, Phil?
More than you could possibly know.
And get a roller. If you're actually in the running business, make sure you get a roller. Oh, what the hey.
Do some yoga.
And yoga. Mary, would you like to give me a number between 2 and 24, please?
4.
Number 4. Very good choice. Number 4 is always out there. And curiously, is the number of my house in Middlesbrough. It's very spooky.
Okay.
Exactly. It's that kind of strange, spooky. Tessa Snart is snowed under, quite literally, so hopefully she's enjoyed the show and it's helped her on her way from that point of view. Likewise, Emma Tennyson also snowed under from that point of view. But as far as number 4 is actually concerned, and remember, we're not numbers, we're free people.
There's always more than one right answer, path, person, possibility, nuance, or flavor. So insist upon none. Insisting on details always limits you. Purple moonbeam chocolate, please, the universe. P.S. Or should that be coyote ocean cofferine? Double chunky vanilla? Stop me. Desert cactus crunch.
I knew he'd love the P.S.
Enlightening.
I'm a bit confused.
Be open and the answer will manifest itself for your girl self, Emily. That's the key thing. Thanks certainly to Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, William Coles, Buck from Hawaii, Paul Mannion, Luke Carradine, Thomas Schafansky, Phil Leoness, and you, dear listener. And what are the last two questions for Phil Leoness, please? Emily.
Have you had a good telephonic link with us today?
Sure, when do we get started?
And will you be joining us sometime soon?
I'll be back each of the next 2 weeks. Ooh. And then I will beg off and require Lily Holloman to take my place again.
it's just a joy to have the Hollywood, the Hollyman soul personification in the whole system. By the way, Penny Evans, we forgot to mention a couple of things coming through there. Perhaps you'd like to read it out, Emily, just to actually sort of get the full message across here as we head off the show.
She's ready for my holiday to France and Italy for a month in May/June. First got two gigs, my own. I'm singing in the Spring Fair again on Bank Holiday Monday at 11:15 a.m. and later at 1:15 p.m.
Two shows. Same day, Bank Holiday Monday. Yeah.
Then I'm off to see David
Duchovny.
Duchovny, there we go. Next Thursday in Glasgow.
Glasgow.
Mm. Last week I met Russell Watson. Mm. What a voice! Yeah. As he performed at the Opera House, and I gave him a CD.
And
of
Russell
mine.
Watson, the person who sang the theme to Enterprise, has actually got a Penny Evans CD in his hand as well. It's fantastic. Thanks to Fiona Williams, to Emily Jones, and to Mary Dancy. That's it, Phil. It's time for you to lead the team in a rousing chorus of bye bye. A one, a two, a three.
Bye-bye.
Bye bye. Bye.